This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
This is Letters from the Interior's debut. This is the first reading, so thank you, Philadelphia. This book really began for me in 2015. We lived in Amman, my family, my husband, and our three daughters. We lived in Amman for a few years, and we returned from Amman to Seattle right after that first wave of what became known as the Arab Spring. So we had visited some of the cities that became embroiled in revolutions or large major changes, and we got to kind of watch from close by how people were processing those events. And in 2015, I started to really write into that experience and think about the ways in which histories are narrated, rarely, in my view, especially Arab histories, by women, even though all around me, women had been and were continuing to narrate histories just in ways that maybe aren't mainstreamed. And I started to think about the role of Fairuz music, who you heard when you walked in tonight, in being interwoven into all of my understandings of history of cities like Amman and Damascus and Jerusalem and Nablus and all of these neighboring cities. Because Fairuz is the music that plays every single morning on every single radio station in those cities in the Arab world, regardless of which cities are being bombed or who's under siege or whose children are being, you know, dragged off to jail. There is a Fairuz soundtrack that is literally morning music. And I started to think about those love songs and those songs for lost love and impossible love as maybe larger or growing frames for historical experience, not just individual or personal experience. And that was really the impetus behind this book. So we'll read some poems and we'll chat more about history and music and Fairuz. Root work. In Arabic class, we learned that all words can be traced back to their three-letter roots. Ms. Sahar used to slash through their hearts with chalk to show us the distance between a writer and her desk, or the one and loneliness, were coiled up in the majuscules of meme, lurking in Alif's languid yawn. I go foraging when words form a dense fog. It's easiest with the news. That vocabulary shrinks year after year. I know the few letters needed for understanding. What does it mean when the difference between witness and tombstone is just one vowel? One of my favorite Arab childhood experiences was sitting in my grandparents' house and listening to stories that my grandfather would improvise. And they all start with Kan Ya Makan. And he would say Fi Adim Zaman, but I think my book argues Tul Zaman. Upon a place in time, there once was. And what was a country? This is never sufficient. It was known by people there that once was eternal. There once was a place. Where is yours? What do you claim as its borders? How do you translate the word there? Once was a jagged-edged birthmark, a bloodline testimonial, holding memory captive, prying its fingernails loose, lashing its chest. There once was a place. This is how monuments become rubble. One of the things that is important to me in this book is to capture, as I said, the variety of ways in which we women especially tell or keep or save a history. And I mentioned my grandparents' house, which is an unremarkable Amman home, but in many ways is very much like many Arab homes of its time. In terms of the number of large traumas it has survived and been witness to. And so I thought about each of the rooms and our names for them and the words we use for those spaces. both in Arabic and in English, and the way words can nest inside of words and can open possibilities of meaning. So there are a series of poems in this book that are entitled Interior, and I'll share some of those with you. Interior Manzil. To land, as after a flight or journey, as a passerine directed by the compass of its own heart, reclaiming the branch. As an aircraft leveling toward the well-lit embrace of the runway, ferrying families to wedding season and waiting gardens of flower and stone fruit. To land as after a long separation from Earth, after sustained vertigo of descent, the wandering, waterless prayer. To arrive at the doorstep at once daughter and ancestor, a poem forged of unpolished flint and narcissus. To land, and it is our first skin and fierce heartbreak, and it is our anchor in lightless tumult. It is alphabet and harbor. The bulldozers lunge with hungry jaws at each room. The barrels break apart the sky, bathe the buildings of our neighborhoods in flames. In order to dismantle a people, place them in a holding pattern. Keep them in constant flight, circling the map as you thread barbed wire across memory, as you absentee presence, barricade what remains of the streets stripped of their stories. And the book is Letters to the Interior, largely because the narrator is writing letters to her Arabic teacher, Miss Sahar, who you heard mentioned in an earlier poem. So this is the first letter. Dear Miss Sahar, everyone is gathering in the square, and the square is a center that cannot hold, and the center is alive and burning. I don't know how it happened, and yet I've known it always, the poems we sang. Now I understand. They were a compass rose. We were afraid. The architecture of our cities is designed to house the fearful. Maybe we've reached the limits of our fear, our bones broken so often they've set in new shapes. Maybe we are finally free of ourselves. Everyone is in the square, Miss Sahar, and the streets are reclaiming their names. We've taken long drags of tear gas when they fire it into our midst. Our lungs have been decolonized or incinerated, I can't tell. The sound of singing and the scarcity of sleep are making me lightheaded. Language and all its rules reordering my mind. Yesterday, a groom carried his bride through the square, slender vine of Damascus jasmine. A people's wedding, the joyous rave at the end of sorrow. Everywhere is liberation and chanting, threaded with gunfire. The girls have flowers in their hair. The boys are sharing their cigarettes. There is suddenly bread enough for all of us. Or do we hunger for something more? The time for can is setting, Miss Sahar. I need a new grammar for this country. Sometimes I think many of our countries need a new grammar. Might not just be the cities I have in mind. Dear Ms. Sahar, second letter. My friends here say it shouldn't be difficult to choose a date for a wedding. They believe in planning months, sometimes years in advance. Once they've found a dress and a room for dancing, a florist and a cake shop, a day trimmed with white lace awaits. I don't know what it's like to have a platonic relationship with a calendar. Surely some revelation is at hand. In September, the light is supple, and brides want a golden crown of evening, but all I can think of is the red clay of Shatila, exhaling the bodies of the camp. The woman who sounded like you, her long fingers a silk fan gathered at her mouth, and her cry, "Ana al-gharib al-ma ili hada." Her gaze wandering down the road where the truck carried the men away. When can we celebrate? May is another well-lit month, wisteria clusters on newly green branches, and in the cool of night, we walk through clouds of its perfume, but all I can think of are the boats of Haifa spilling their sorrowing cargo, and that woman who looked like you, running through fires, reaching for the stones of her house, carrying a phantom while her child at home slept in the cradle of absence. How do we plan for tomorrow? I'm thinking about the nominative case, Ms. Sahar, how the word mansub cannot simply be the state of Cannes, how Nasb Tiskari is a memorial, and in my imagination, always a crumbling limestone, somber weight, like all our nouns, and how the word on the street, and shorn of its classical elegance, broken down into a verb again, just means you've been played. I think one of the formative Palestinian in exile experiences for me as a young person was watching the coverage of the Sabra and Shatila massacre. My memory of it is fairly grainy, but there is a woman, very distinctly a woman, who is coming to call out for help, leaving the camps. And years later, as an adult, I watched a long documentary series called Harb Lebanon, The War of Lebanon, or The War on Lebanon. And that woman, the footage of that woman, was there again. And I've been thinking about her ever since, so I thought it was necessary to give her a home in a poem. The other sort of character or personality that features in this book is the verb can. Can, for those of you who know or study Arabic or speak Arabic, is a past tense verb. And I think of can in the feminine because we learned her as kana wa akhawatha, can and her sisters, the past tense verbs. So can figures in this book in many of the poems. Can loves the insomniac. Once upon Makan, the news reports were narrated in somnolent tones at 7 p.m., the top story was always a receiving line, and I learned that only after the men in suits were done kissing the leader's chin could the night begin. To sleep is a verb. To sleepwalk is the condition of a person with dispossessed dreams, of verbs forcibly confiscated from their owners. If can appears at the beginning of a sleep sequence, its subject will want deep, uninterrupted, or restless for its predicate. An example of how to diagram this sentence would be, can is a verb in the past tense, sleep, its subject, is in the nominative case. For translation purposes, we slept while our world walked away. I think what I'd like to do next is share one of the Fairuz-inspired poems. Ms. Sahar, like the women of her, the women in her city, listens to Fairuz music in the morning, and so a lot of these poems are inspired by either a title of a Fairuz song or a line from a Fairuz song. Ms. Sahar listens to Fairuz sing "The Bee's Path." If you're going to go, if you're going to scorch this heart and leave a desert in your absence, tell me now and I'll follow the bees. If you're going to scorch this heart, I'll hem the horizon in solitude. Tell me now and I'll follow the bees inside the anemones scarring the hillside. I'll hem the horizon in solitude, the light lengthening, breaking inside the anemones scarring the hillside. I'll spiral beneath the dome of the sky. The light lengthening, breaking, this moment gathered around us as I spiral beneath the dome of the sky. Spring is a ravishment, forever dying, dying, dying. This moment gathered around us is honey and wild greens and the promise of ravishment, forever dying, dying, dying. We're just another love song, remembered or forgotten. Honey and wild greens and the promise of losing you in the desert of what happens next. We're just another love song, remembered or forgotten. Will you stay until the anemones fold back into the land? Will you stay until the anemones fold back into the land or leave a desert in your absence? Are we just another love song, remembered or forgotten? Tell me now, and I'll follow the bees. There will be prizes later for those who can place the songs. It's a little treasure hunt for the Fairuz references. I'll be honest, on my mind today are, specifically because of hunger strikes that are ongoing, Palestinian prisoners, Palestinian political prisoners, especially in Israeli jails, who number greater than 5,000, 210 of which are children. And so this song, Biktub Ismak Ya Habibi, inspired this poem, but maybe went in a different direction. Miss Sahar listens to Fairuz sing, I'll write your name, Habibi. I gathered the letters of your name the day they came for you. It is not our custom to cry when what is needed is fortitude. The day they came for you, I strung my tears like pearls on silk thread when what is needed is fortitude. I worried the letters of your name like prayer beads. I strung my tears like pearls on silk thread to withstand your absence, the weight of days. I worried the letters of your name like prayer beads, clasped them on my wrists like shackles to withstand your absence, the weight of days. You scattered the letters of my name, and I clasped yours on my wrist like shackles, embrace of cold silver, bracelet of light. You scattered the letters of my name, and I etched the letters of yours into the olive, embrace of cold silver, bracelet of light. I slid them like globes of sap beneath its bark. I etched the letters of your name into the olive, silent knife-edge prayer, alphabet incantation, slid them like globes of sap beneath its bark to nourish you with the pulse of our waiting. Silent knife-edge prayer, alphabet incantation, when rains course over the wounds of this story, to nourish you with the pulse of our waiting, your name will burn in night lanterns. When rains course over the wounds of this story, your name will shelter beneath olive leaves. Your name will burn in night lanterns as our voices join others at the border. Your name will shelter beneath olive leaves. It is not our custom to cry as our voices join others. At the border, I gathered the letters of your name. And because no Arab story would be complete without food, who knows the particular dessert? I'm going to say that Syrians get to claim it, but I'll probably start a fight. Halawa jibin. It's a particular dessert that is made with semolina and sweet cheese and a beautiful orange blossom syrup. But the thing about it that stayed, that lodged in my mind, is I watched these Syrian pastry chefs make it, and it requires stretching this very fine dough over and over extensively with your hands. And there was something about the motion of their hands, their very tired and worn hands, and this tiny, delicate, you know, cloud of a dessert that it produced. Anyway, lemon blossoms. In Ms. Sahar's Arabic class, we learned to conjugate the verb sar, a variant of the past tense. We learned that to describe what became of the people after the war, we would have to remember a tray of cheese pastries, supple and pale, nestled in neat rows. We would have to remember the people who knead the cheese and semolina into dough, silken yards of it, stretched into pliant tenderness by their hands. We would have to remember the people who harvest Aleppo pistachios, and with their thumbnails, slit the skin of the fruit down to the bone white shell, excise the nut meat, and crush it to powder. We would have to remember the people who gather lemon blossoms in winter, bathe petals in syrup, and ease them over a quiet flame, transforming the buds into a garnet-colored jam. We would have to remember the people who make the cheese pastry stuffed with sweetened cream, the pistachio now a dust, the color of hillsides in spring, the lemon blossoms a blood-bright garnish. The people now besieged, eating weeds and sipping soiled snow that pools in craters of rubble throughout the camp. This is how we learned to conjugate sar. I think we'll do a couple more, and then I would like to share some with you from my previous book, Water and Salt. What can I tell her I've learned? From all these love songs, from a lifetime of mornings with Feiruz and the news that forces its way into the house and raises the ground and collapses the sky and in cycles, for no discernible reason, passes us by. That love can replace sleep, that so much of a life can be squandered for fear of forgetting, that sleep is a staircase and many a grandmother sat at its footstep, keeping vigil, clicking prayer beads, that in the evening an old bridge is the best place to watch the fog swallow the road, that in the evening an old bridge is the best place to watch the fog swallow the road, that October clouds are sorrowing vessels, that rain is an unreliable lover, and that dry seasons, even longer and more scorching, are the only certainty. That in Arabic, love and the wind share a name, each emotion leaning toward what captures us. That a breeze tender as July in the valley can become a verb. That we make promises in the name of love and its changing winds, that a land in which our hands have planted an olive tree or harvested leaves from the grapevine claims us as mercilessly as a first love, that a lover can ask for the moon, a metaphor for sleepless devotion, or for a clear sky without night raids, which we can marvel together at the burnished silhouettes of the hills, that we can long for a love to return and to remain a longing, that even though Feiruz sings, Habibi, what's the use of crying? What now is the meaning of all these words? We return to the laments, a teaspoonful in each cup, that we portion the day between ablutions and the stirring of coffee grounds into a slender-armed pot, troubling our paltry water supply for alternating sacraments, that in the eye of an unraveling, we're still singing, as those before us did, that it buries or sustains us, we cannot know. I think I'll pause there from Letters from the Interior. And since I mentioned Palestinian prisoners, this book, Water and Salt, the title poem was inspired by the most recent mass hunger strike in 2014, began in June of 2014, that was called Adrab al-Karame, a strike for dignity, or Idrab Mayumileh, the strike of water and salt. And it's because all of the political prisoners in Israeli jails decided en masse to subsist only on water and salt. And I couldn't get the music of that line out of my head, or the unfathomable courage it took to take on an action like that. Water and salt. Behind the walls of your jails, we wait. Heartbeats audible now, muffled thuds above the current of blood running thin. Indigo rivulets pulsing loud beneath parchment skin, chafing and coarse like stone walls that surround us. We lie side to side. We hunger for what eating cannot feed. We carve out a sanctuary that no beating can tear down, no interrogation room scars can pierce. This is our ache. We decide how we live and if we die. We decide who gives and who takes away. We claim the freedom to turn stone into sunlight streaming through your jails, to sip water and salt like sacrament. Freedom to own our bodies and the land beneath them, to breathe the air on both sides of the wall. Freedom to wait and wait for your checkpoints and your watchtowers to be subsumed in a crashing wave of water and salt. You never saw it coming, this cleansing, how we have become this ocean. Thank you.